Why, about an hour.
It was simply amazing, she repeated abstractedly. But I swore I wouldn't tell it, and here I am tantalizing you. She yawned gracefully in my face. Please, come and see me. Phone book, under the name of Mrs. Sigourney Howard, my aunt.
She was hurrying off as she talked. Her brown hand waved a jaunty salute as she melted into her party at the door. Rather ashamed that on my first appearance I had stayed so late, I joined the last of Gatsby's guests, who were clustered around him. I wanted to explain that I'd hunted for him early in the evening, and to apologize for not having known him in the garden.
"Don't mention it," he enjoined me eagerly. "Don't give it another thought, old sport."
The familiar expression held no more familiarity than the hand which reassuringly brushed my shoulder. "And don't forget we're going up on the hydroplane tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock." Then the butler behind his shoulder. "Philadelphia wants you on the phone, sir." "All right, in a minute, tell him I'll be right there. Good night, good night, good night," he smiled. And suddenly there seemed to be a pleasant significance in having been among the last to go, as if he had desired it all the time.
"Good night, old sport, good night."
But as I walked down the steps, I saw that the evening was not quite over. 50 feet from the door, a dozen headlights illuminated a bizarre and tumultuous scene. In the ditch beside the road, right side up, but violently shorn of one wheel, rested a new coupe, which had left Gatsby's drive not 2 minutes before. The sharp jut of a wall accounted for the detachment of the wheel, which was now getting considerable attention from half a dozen curious chauffeurs. However, as they had left their cars blocking the road, a harsh, discordant din from those in the rear had been audible for some time, and added to the already violent confusion of the scene. A man in a long duster had dismounted from the wreck and now stood in the middle of the road, looking from the car to the tire and from the tire to the observers in a pleasant, puzzled way.
"See," he explained, "it went in the ditch."
The fact was infinitely astonishing to him, and I recognized first the unusual quality of wonder and then the man. It was the late patron of Gatsby's library.
"How'd it happen?"
He shrugged his shoulders.
"I know nothing whatever about mechanics," he said decisively.
"But how did it happen? Did you run into the wall?"
"Don't ask me," said Owl Eyes, washing his hands of the whole matter. "I know very little about driving, next to nothing. It happened, and that's all I know."
"Well, if you're a poor driver, you oughtn't to try driving at night."
"But I wasn't even trying," he explained indignantly. "I wasn't even trying."
An awed hush fell upon the bystanders.
"Do you want to commit suicide? You're lucky it was just a wheel, a bad driver, and not even trying." "You don't understand," explained the criminal. "I wasn't driving. There's another man in the car."
The shock that followed this declaration found voice in a sustained, "Ah," as the door of the coupe swung slowly open. The crowd, it was now a crowd, stepped back involuntarily, and when the door had opened wide, there was a ghostly pause. Then, very gradually, part by part, a pale, dangling individual stepped out of the wreck, pawing tentatively at the ground with a large, uncertain dancing shoe. Blinded by the glare of the headlights and confused by the incessant groaning of the horns, the apparition stood swaying for a moment before he perceived the man in the duster.
"What's the matter?" he inquired calmly.
"Did we run out of gas?"
"Look!" Half a dozen fingers pointed at the amputated wheel. He stared at it for a moment and then looked upward as though he suspected that it had dropped from the sky.
"It came off," someone explained.
He nodded.